the Lean on Agile podcast show. I'm your host, Shaheen, and I have a very special guest today, very renowned guest, a speaker, and her name is Joanna Rotman. Thanks, Joanna, for being on a Lean on Agile podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And I'm sure that I won't do justice introducing yourself. I'm going to add, after you introduce yourself, how I know you, but I let you introduce yourself for our audience. Who is Joanna Rotman for our audience? Please go ahead and
Okay, well, first, thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here. And second, I often say that people know me as the pragmatic manager. I write an email newsletter called that, but yeah. I take a very pragmatic approach to almost anything that begins with a P or an M. So projects, products, programs, management, you name it. And of course, the topic of this little podcast is different than all of that, but it's part of what I have encountered as part of my consulting business.
Right. And that got me to tell you guys how I got to know Joanna. Joanna is one of the thought leaders that I know of for a long time. I read many books of her, and as she says, she has many books written. And she's one of the unique thought leaders in the Agile space that is not associated with any of, as I know, with any of these big names in Agile. And I know only a few of these thought leaders around. Another exposure that I had to her was a while ago when I was talking to Esther, and I was looking Esther Derby, for you if you don't know, and I was asking, I'm writing a blog, and she was telling me that, oh, you can use Johanna's expertise in how to write and how to be a better writer. Maybe you can write a book. She has all those services. I yet have to use those services, but this helps us, or is going to divert us, what our talk is about today. So the topic of our talk is mostly about how to write for a conference proposal, or how to start approaching talking at conference proposal, which very incidentally, if I may say, I approached Joanna, and she said, oh, I already write a book on that. And I was like, this is perfect for our podcast listeners to talk about that, go over some of the tips and tricks that she can tell us. Although this podcast won't cover all of that, so the book is available on LeanPub, and she can tell you more about that as well. And yeah, and it's very timely, because one of the biggest Agile conferences, Agile 20XX or Agile 2020 for this year, call for proposal is still open. And if you guys are thinking about proposing a talk there, this would be a good time to listen to this podcast and listen to Joanna's suggestions. She has plenty of years of experience. Do you want to say something on that, Joanna?
I started speaking professionally in 94. I had done a few things before that as part of my role inside the organization, but as a consultant, I believe it was 94.
Oh, wow. 94.
Yeah. Long time ago.
And okay, so maybe let's start from this point. Joanna, who you would think that should propose a talk? Who shall propose a topic?
Oh, so almost anybody. If you have an experience that you want to tell people about, you should propose an experience report. Right. If you have seen several things work for several organizations or several departments, you should definitely propose a talk for that. So and also if you have some failures that we can all learn from, that would be really great if you can propose a talk for that. Mike Griffiths, last year, I believe he's based in Calgary. So he's another Canadian, Shaheen. Okay. So he did an experience report about how things did not succeed at a particular client. He didn't tell us the name of the client. That was fine. He didn't identify the product, but he he extract patterns from this kind of failure. And that as an experience report, oh my goodness, I found that quite powerful.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that. I'm going to find this gentleman that you mentioned his name. I'm going to put a link on the podcast. I'm eager to learn more about the pattern that he found himself.
Yeah.
The reason that I asked you this question was I was reading your book, and at the end of the book, you were mentioning about who shall propose and why people shall speak or shall talk, give talks, which was resonating with me very much, because my philosophy was that the more that you talk or the more that you expose yourself, the more you learn about that topic. And that's exactly one of the points that you pointed out. And it was one of the greatest, again, thought leaders that I know of, Jerry Weinberg. In his books, he was saying that I practice something and then teach that, then I give a talk on that, then I write a book on that. and I yet haven't written a book, but you have done it a lot. So it's helped us as well to learn and help us as well to polish our craftsmanship.
Well, and I think that I at least, even though I am a huge extrovert, I don't actually know what I'm thinking until I have to write it down for a conference talk. And then I learn as I create the abstract and the more information and the learning outcomes, I learn and I especially learn as I deliver the talk. And that's the extrovert part of me. I don't quite know what's going to come out until I actually say it. So I find it really helpful.
Right. And in your book, you mentioned that from every conference to every conference, you polish your talk and you polish your abstract, you polish what you're writing about that conference, right? So tell us more about that. Doesn't it take much of your time? Isn't it easier to like have one and submit to many conferences?
I guess if I was only interested in one kind of a thing, I could do one talk and submit it everywhere. And maybe the next year I could submit a different talk everywhere. And I am not that focused on one little thing. So this is an Agile and Lean podcast. And so when I think about Agile and Lean, I think about a real system of work. And that means it's not just the product, it's not just the project, it's not just the managers, it's not just the technical practices. It's all of that together as a system. So for me, and I use speaking and writing to market myself, of course, and I also use that for my learning. And I find that if I focus on just one little piece of that, I'm not helping people understand about the entire system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know some of the speakers that I know, they some of them that I know is picking on one topic, and you see throughout the year they are using that topic over and over. When I talked to them, they were telling me that it's easier, and in the past year, I talk at different conferences, but each conference that I talked at was a different topic. So I can tell you that it was very hard on me to prepare for them. You mentioned in one of your, about knowing your audience, right? So every time that I was talking, the audience was different too. So one of them was experience report. One of them was, I was giving them tools to practice. Again, I love how you put it. It's looking at the bigger system. It's not only about one thing that you can focus on and bring value to. Yeah.
Well, and even if I give, quote, the same talk, it's not the same. I always change it. I always edit it. I always update it. I have new pictures. Yeah, it's never the same.
Yeah. So I was reading your book and this caught my eyes. You mentioned that some of the conferences love jargon words, right? And you are not typically submitting to those conferences, but some people might, right? So are there any conferences that you you want to talk about them here, that people that are starting or want to give a talk can start from there, or one of the better conferences that you have been to, you want to talk about them here?
So let me talk about principles of choosing a conference instead. Because I mean, what works for me is not going to work for everybody else. I think it's really important. How much do you want feedback about your session? Are you doing an exploratory session, or are you doing something that you want to explore this particular topic and see how people would react? So last year at the Agile 2019, I was trying to figure out what year it was. At Agile 2019, I did a workshop about modern management. I have a triad of books that I will finish this year about modern management made easy. And I wanted to run it as a workshop. I've given talks about those topics. I've written about those topics. But I had not yet done a workshop in the same sense. So. And that actually went quite well, so I was really happy about that. But I wanted enough managers to come to that session that I would have enough data. So that's one of the reasons I proposed it for Agile 2019 and not a more local meetup.
Right.
So I live in Boston. We have Agile New England. We probably have a few other meetups that I might not know about. Right. But if we get 60 or 100 people at that meetup, that's right. Not the same as having 150 managers right, in the
right.
room.
Right. Yeah. And that talks to me about one of your sections, that know your audience and pick your audience. Because I see most of these are, or I was on a reviewer committee for Agile 2019 last year for a coaching track, and we were reviewing the talks that were coming in, and you can tell that this talk was specifically designed for a specific group when you look at your audience, right? But some of the talk was basically a Scrum Master, Agile coaches, whomever are interested, right? So you are talking about that in your book about to pick your audience. And this was a good example of what you mentioned.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am sure that, in fact, I think a couple of people came up to me afterwards, said, I'm an architect. I'm something else. But they understood the context of the session. And that was the most important thing for me.
Right. So if we talk about writing your first proposal or one of the proposals that you want to write, you are suggesting to start from the outcome, not the abstract, not the audience, not the title, right? Tell us more about this process very shortly, if you can.
Well, I actually had always iterated through my proposals before. And then last year at Chris Merman's session at Agile 2019 about write a proposal, he said, start with your outcomes. And I thought, oh, of course, acceptance criteria. Why wouldn't I not start with that? Yeah. Right. So. I had always iterated through and then made sure that the outcomes I wanted were sufficient for the abstract I had created. But if I start with the outcomes and I start with verbs, I am much more likely to get the proposal I want a lot faster.
Right. I love how you looked at it as acceptance criteria as well. So, and in your book, you mentioned it too right now, that it starts with verbs. That's something that you want to tell people what exactly they're getting out of your talk, mm-hmm. right? And then you are moving for the abstract. Tell us the one startling sentence and see here from, I guess, Jerry Weinberg or someone else that you mentioned in your book.
Yep. So there are, well, that one's, hey, you see so. But one startling sentence is really clever. And I got this from Kent Beck. It's on the wiki. I have the link to it. The first sentence is, what's the problem, right? Why are you even thinking about this particular topic for a proposal? The second sentence is, why is this problem a problem, right? So you might say, I have an example about multitasking in the book, but let me just walk through maybe technical practices. So you might even start with, nobody does technical practices. And the reason the problem is a problem is because we don't actually finish the work. Right? It does not matter if we're using iterations or flow, we're not really finishing. The startling answer is, if we embed technical practices, regardless of iterations or flow, in everything we do, not just software people, but managers, that might change the entire approach to doing an agile transformation. The implication of that startling sentence, right, embed technical practices, is we now have a different possibility for an agile transformation that does not rely on a framework.
Right.
So, and I don't know if that's the right four sentences, but it certainly gets people, it gets the attention of the program committee.
Right.
And that's what I want.
Right. And talk about the program committee, because in your book, you're saying they are your first audience. Don't think about the people that are coming to your talk first. Think about your program committee, that they are your audience and you want to propose for them.
Well, you do.
Right.
Because if they don't understand it, I mean, if they are not interested, if they give you feedback where they say, I don't see it. I don't see the section. I don't see the story. I don't see the problems. That's really valuable feedback. It might not be easy to hear, but it's so necessary to hear.
Right. I highlighted a sentence from your book that says, when you get rejection, you feel that they rejected you. It's not that they rejected you. They rejected your proposal and your topic. Don't take it personal.
And then I believe I said, yeah, it feels personal.
So we all go through that, but we need to keep in mind that maybe at that time it wasn't right for that conference. Maybe it wasn't right for the audience that they were trying to approach and they were trying to target. Again, it's not about you that propose, but look at it, at least to the people that I suggest you go for conference, look at it as a feedback loop for yourself, that they are giving you something in feedback, right? That it didn't work. I have a topic that I was proposing for a couple of years and finally it got accepted in many places, right?
You never
know. Yeah. Sometimes they were saying, oh, we have seen similar topics, but many by a very famous thought leader. And then because of that, I say, okay, so how can I make it a little bit different or add more value to even for the, and then I reiterate that and reiterate that and finally got accepted twice. So I confess that I never did that myself, but I'm going to do that from moving forward, is the readability and grade levels.
So
you are talking about, please go ahead and talk about them.
So what's really interesting about checking your grammar is not so much the correctness of the sentences. It's really about how easily can somebody read this and understand it.
Right.
So I really try hard to make my proposals certainly lower than grade 8. And I know everybody has a college degree. That's not the point.
Right.
The point is the faster and easier they can read my proposal, the more likely they are to accept it. Because I'm getting my ideas across in a way that totally makes sense for them.
Right. Right. And for folks that are using Word has this option, and you mentioned that Grammarly has this option as well. So you can use those options. I'm going to use Grammarly. And last but not least, you talk about in your book about a great title, or at least and clickbait. That's what caught my eyes. So and if I remember correctly, so let's talk about the clickbait and what how to avoid them, how to make it valuable and not use those. And why not?
So yeah, I mean, some people really like clickbaity titles,
right.
And I don't want a bait and switch. Yeah, that's what it's called. I don't want bait. I don't want to think of people as fish.
Right.
I want to connect with them. I want to invite them into my session. So a clickbaity title is much more likely to say something like, look over here and then see over there. So I believe I gave some options. Cutest kitten. I mean,
right.
That, you know, cutest agile, cutest lean. You would not believe what this organization looked like. The quiz things, I realize that people really like, you know, they want to know what house they would be in Harry Potter. That's not for a conference proposal.
Right.
I just don't think it's, I don't think it's that useful. So what I really like to say is, how can I make the title connect with the problems that my readers have?
Right.
And if I can invite them into me, if I can help them connect, then I have done at least part of my job.
Right.
And I suggested a kind of a two-part title, which is the part one is what problems do people want to solve? And that might be agile and lean transformation, colon. And then part two is, what will they get if they solve those problems? Frictionless releasing. Everybody focused on the same problems. And I don't know what it is for anybody else's session, right? That
right.
if we take the example of embedding technical practices for excellence in everything, maybe the problem is full corporate agile and lean transformation, creating excellence in technical and management practices.
Right.
Now, I just came up with that off the top of my head.
Right.
I would need to check that with a headline analyzer.
Right. And it's a great thing to know that there are headline analyzer. I never use them. I was going around and asking people around, guys, do you think if this is a talk, are you coming and listening to this? Or what would you guess of this talk could be? But yeah, that's awesome tool to have. One thing that I figured out or I learned when I read your book was this talk or the proposal that you're putting together is about solving a problem. And what problem are you trying to solve? That's one of the greatest questions that one of the coaches asked me, and I'm using my coaching practice. What problem are you trying to solve? And I figure out that the outcome, the abstract, the sometimes Agile 2020, for example, as for learning outcomes, this all revolves around the problem solving. And I love how your perspective changes once you think about, okay, so what problem am I trying to solve? So it gives you a better look at, okay, so am I solving this problem for all of the Agile coaches, for example, or the Agile coaches that are within this area, within this problem, within this situation? So that helps to narrow it down even better. So I really enjoyed that perspective as well.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So I have gone through all of my notes that I had. Do you want to add anything else for the people that are listening in?
So I think it's really important to say, if you ever say to yourself, well, I don't really want to speak at a conference, I don't know enough,
right.
That could be a symptom of imposter syndrome.
Right.
And all of us have that at some point. All of us, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. And I still, every so often, I think, do I actually know enough? And the answer is, yes, you do. And you might know it in a small context. So as a consultant, I have a lot more broad experience. I often have 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 clients with similar problems. I can create patterns and talk about those patterns without actually having to talk about any given client.
Right.
You might, if you're inside an organization and you still are thinking about getting your speaker feet wet, you might have to get permission to talk Right. about some of the stuff that you're doing. But you have deep experience in your organization. So it's really worthwhile to say, because, and it's all because of the learning. I learn when I create the abstract. I learn when I give the talk. I learn from the feedback from the program committee. I learn from people coming up to me at the end of sessions. I learn all the way through this. And that learning is invaluable. I don't even know how to put a price on that. So what I'm suggesting to people is think about ways that you can give a talk about something that would make sense to other people and would help you with your learning.
Right. I misspoke when I said I've gone through all my notes. One session you had about feedback and the imposter syndrome was in that. And you said, this is what I'm not doing. This is one thing that I highlighted. You said, every time you receive a feedback, you said at least response within the 24 hours. Even if the response is only thanks, let me think about this, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that because people on the other side of the wall, they are putting time and effort to put that feedback in. And you were the track chair for Agile 20XX yourself. So you know how challenging it is to get all people's feedback, reviewers get together and then send the feedback. So I guess that's something that we need to think about. And the feedback would be the good mechanism for us to learn and keep it going, keep the flow going, not let it be a stale. Because if you let it be a stale and after 10 days you respond to that, the reviewer won't even have what feedback did I give to them.
Yeah. So feedback really is a gift. You don't have to like it.
Right. Yeah.
but you can appreciate the gift.
Right.
So I think that's really worth it.
Right. This is very vulnerable of you to say that, but you said in your book that before 2017 your title is stunk.
They were horrible.
Yeah,
they were horrible.
Yeah, so you guys can start, because Joanna Rodman's with all these experience since 2 years or 3 years ago, she believes that her titles were not perfect. So it's nothing stopping us from trying it and getting feedback and making it better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, one of the biggest chances that I know of that people can get good feedback are the Agile 20XX conference, because they have you were the track chair of that. You can tell us more about how the feedback worked for them. And I know that I'm going to double check, but I think the February 7th is a deadline for submitting the conference talk. So there's not much time left to get some feedback.
So I am a shepherd on the experience report track. I am no longer a track chair of anything. I was a track chair several years running. I've been a reviewer, I think, since about 2007 or 8. I mean, I just keep reviewing, which I like it. And especially in the experience report track, we really need to understand, what is the experience? What is the story? How many times did somebody try something and succeed, try something and fail? What happened at the end? I mean, I find that I love shepherding experience reports, and we want to get the best possible experience reports from the conference. So I keep doing that. And I find that I just replied to feedback this morning. I think about almost 2 weeks ago, I offered some feedback to somebody and I was hoping that they understood it. And finally, they responded to me and they fixed one or two sentences, but not all of the sentences. And it's still not quite comprehensible to me how this is really an experience. I don't understand it. So I asked more questions. I made more suggestions, and I'm hoping that this is useful to them, but we'll see. And I don't remember when we stop offering feedback, when we have to go into evaluation. But at some point, you know, if you're thinking about submitting to a conference, submit early.
Right.
The earlier you submit, the faster the feedback you will get, and the more valuable you will find the feedback.
Right. Yeah. And people like Joanna Rothman might be on the other side of the wall giving you feedback, which would be invaluable for you to receive that feedback.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm sure it will be. One thing that I put a note on to talk about is about your bio, like these conferences.
Oh, yeah.
For the people, like, I don't remember which part of the book was, if you are a very well-known speaker, like, that's speak for itself, and you might not need that much bio to put for yourself or people to know you, right? But if you are someone like myself or someone that is less known, how do you want to put your bio in, right? So tell us more about how to prepare that.
So I actually have a template. I know, you're so surprised. So, I mean, I have a template in chapter 6 called Consider This Template for Your Bio. And the bio, I think of my bio as the first way to connect with the reader. Right. So I don't say, I guess I could say, but I also have children and a husband. So I never say, I'm Joanna Rothman. Yeah, you should know me. Yeah, that's nonsense. But I introduce, in line one, I introduce myself, and I always use my first name. I sometimes use my last, but I want people to think of me as Joanna, a colleague, a possible friend. I want them to connect with me in some way. So I do that. And I also use verbs. I avoid passive voice, like the plague. So I never say, hey, Joanna Rothman is.
Right.
That's a passive voice sentence. I say, Joanna Rothman, comma, known as the pragmatic manager, comma, offers, right, a verb,
right,
rank advice for your team or your problems or whatever it is I'm saying these days. Then I talk about line two is help people see your expertise. You might want to talk about years of experience, but I often find that years of experience are not that interesting. Mm-hmm. It's more like, what kinds of things do I do? It's sort of like in the startling sentence, it's what is the problem and why is this problem a problem? In line one, what are the problems I solve? And two, how do I help people solve them?
Right.
You might think about that way. And then line three is my credibility. Line four is about other details. And line five is, if you can offer some kind of a wow, that's great. And if not, at least point back to your website or something. Right. So I don't have a PhD, but even if I did, I wouldn't use it. I mean, you know Jerry Weinberg. Right. Did you know he had a PhD?
No, never.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't use it. Yeah. I mean, he was Jerry.
Right, yeah.
But still, every so often, I'm sure people asked him for a bio. Yeah. And I offered two possible examples that I made up.
Right.
I totally made up these bios. But I think that it's, and then I kind of took them apart so that you could see what was compelling to me about these people's bios. So if all of your speaking is inside the organization, that's fine. And you might want to understand if you have only spoken inside the organization, maybe don't apply to Agile 20XX first.
Right.
Maybe apply to a meetup so you have some speaking experience, so you're not on a big stage before you're on a small stage. But then figure out how you can frame it so that the program committee wants to accept you.
Right. And I can tell you guys, based on my experience, it's really big stage. The venue might catch you, it's the atmosphere, like you would see all of these great people that they all pioneers there. So definitely have some experience before going there. I'm not going to say all of you are going to not be a good speaker for the first time at Agile 20XX. Give it a try, but have in mind that it's like, I don't think a bigger conference than that in for Agile out there.
I think it is the biggest.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know anything about the Scrum gatherings, but it's really big, and you don't need that big an audience for your first talk.
Right.
You might want some experience, right? So if you are a developer or a tester or a BA or a product owner, and you first work on a project with only 7 or 8 people, and then after a couple of years, you work on your team and you are the liaison to other teams in a program. Now you have, quote, scaled your experience. Right. But it's much more helpful to practice where you have a manageable number of communication paths. It's the same thing in a conference.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Joanna. What is one last thing that you want to share with the audience? If there are one true tip for them to start their conference speaking experience.
So think about a talk you could give. Not the whole thing. You don't have to create the whole abstract. What problems have you seen and successfully solved? And then think about a local place or a big place, right? Whatever. Think about one conference you could propose for that talk for, and then use this book and offer me feedback about how it works for you, and try it and see what happens. My experience with conference proposals is the more I proposed, the better I was at proposing. And the more I spoke, the better I was at speaking. So all of this is all how you create. I'm not so sure if I really like the term thought leader, because I'm more of a contrarian thought leader. Okay. Right? Don't do it the way all those other people do. Do it this way, or think about it. Here are 3 options. So I really like to think about, how can I help people at least see my perspective? Mm-hmm. So that they have more choices. And that's the reason I write and speak and do all this stuff.
Right. See, I'm even doing this podcast, I learned something new, that even that calling someone thought leader might not be very friendly to them, or like they like it. So I introduce you as a thought leader, but maybe I should have asked first.
Well, it's very kind of you to think that way. And I honor that. I really appreciate it. And I think part of my thought leadership is the fact that I've been writing and speaking for so long.
Right.
I mean, 25 years. Right. That's when I started. So I have a whole body of work that you can look at. That does not mean that anybody else's thoughts are not also leaders.
Right. True.
And I find that, I am thankful that you like it. It's very sweet of you, and I don't think of myself that way.
Thanks, Joanna, for being on the show. I'm going to put the link to the book and your contact information for people to give you feedback as you ask for after reading the book. And anything else that you might want me to put on the podcast, let me know. If you see valuable, I can put it there. And yeah, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. I really had a blast.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I really enjoyed it. I hope to have you soon sometime.
Bye. Good. I have more books coming.
Yeah, okay.